Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is June 17th, and we are in Treyasar. We're in Zechariah, and Perakeh, Chapter 5. Va'ashuv va'esa inai, and I returned and I lifted my eyes, va'era, and I saw, v'inei megillah afa. And behold, there was a megillah, a scroll, afa. The word afa can be translated in different ways. Rashi says one of the ways of translating it is that it was flying. It was floating in the air. That's one way of translating it. Another way is that it was kfula. It was doubled over. It was somehow folded in on itself. Either way, he sees this megillah. Vayomer elai, so the Malach said to me, Ma ata ro'eh, what do you see? Va'omar, and I said, Ani ro'eh megillah afa, I see this, we'll call it a floating megillah. Arka esrim bo'ama, its length was 20 amos. Virachba eser bo'ama, and its width was 10 amos. So it was 20 amos by 10 amos. Now, bear with me here for the math for a moment. So 20 amos by 10 amos, if it's folded over, if you take a piece of paper and you fold it in half. So, let's get a piece of paper here. So, one second. So if you take a piece of paper, hold on, I'm grabbing a piece of paper here. Okay, so you've got a piece of paper, I'm backing up so you can see it. Piece of paper, and it's folded in half. Now, pretend that this is twice its length is twice its width. So it's 20 by 10, and it's doubled over. That means if you unfold it, it'll now be, I know this is a rectangle, but it would be a perfect square. If it was 20 by 10, and then you unfold it, it's now 20 by 20. That's what happens when you have something doubled over, and it's doubled over, its length is twice the size of its width. Then when you unfold it, and now it's not doubled over anymore, you'll have a perfect square. So this Megillah Afa, which was 20 by 10, that means when it was doubled over, when it was unfolded, it was 20 by 20. Now, if you have, again, you're going to have to pretend that this is a perfect square rather than a rectangle. If you have 20 by 20, let's put it this way. If 20 by 20, and you have writing on both sides, that means the writing space is two of these, because it's one side and the other side. So you've got now two 20 by 20s. When you take two 20 by 20s and put them next to each other, for those of you who are mathematically inclined, this will be simple. For those who are not, this will be difficult. But if you take two 20 by 20s and put them next to each other, you get 20 by 40. That's the way the math works. Because this is 20 by 20. Now we're going to put another one over here. So its height does not change. It's still the same 20. But its length changes from 20 to 40. So it becomes 20 by 40. So this scroll, which had been doubled over 20 by 10, unfolded, and then writing on both sides means the writing surface is 20 by 40. 20 by 40, amos. So 20 times 40 is 800 square amos. This writing area is 800 square amos. Now, we're not talking about amos that we use here. We're talking about the amos that are used by Hashem when He makes measurements. So, in Hashem's measurements, the writing space is 800 square amos. Now, how big is the entire world? how big is the entire universe that Hashem created in Hashem's writing. So the Olam, as the Gemara tells us, if you use Hashem's measurements, so the Gemara tells us based on a pasuk in Yeshaya where it says Bazeres Tikain, that Hashem set up the world. I assume it means the universe, even if it only means this world, it's still going to make a difference, but I think it means the entire universe. It says the world, which I think means the physical world. It says it's a zeres. A zeres is half an amma. That's what a zeres is. So the entire world, olam, which means the universe, is half an amma by half an amma. Now I recognize that we're dealing with three dimensions, and this is being expressed in two dimensions, but we'll have to deal with that because that's the way the Gemara says it. So the entire universe, the entire creation of Hashem, is a half amma by a half amma. That's a zeres by a zeres. How many square ammos is that? Half an amma by half an amma is a quarter of a square amma. If that does not make sense, you'll have to just accept that for the time being. So the entire olam is only a quarter of a square amma. This Megillah Afa that Zechariah sees is 800 square amos. What's the difference between a quarter square amma and 800 square amos? 800 square amos is 3,200 times a quarter of a square amma. So this Megillah that Zechariah sees, says the Gemara, is 3,200 times the entire olam. That's what the Gemara says. What is this Megillah Afa that he sees? He is seeing the entirety of the Torah. The Torah is 3,200 times the entire olam. Even if you say the olam means only this world, that's still vast, but I believe olam actually means the entire universe, in which case we're talking about in proportions that we can't possibly fathom. But the Torah itself, meaning the depths of Torah, that what the Torah encompasses, is 3,200 times the olam itself. And that is what Zechariah sees over here. He sees this Megillah Afa that is gigantic. So, what about this? Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vayomer Eli, and the Malach said to me, Zos Ha'Allah, this is the oath. Hayotzeis al pnei chol ha'aretz, that is going out on the face of all the land. Ki chol ha'gonev mizeh kamoha nika. Because all who steal from this, meaning from this Torah, have so far been clean, meaning they have escaped punishment. Hashem has not punished all those who have stolen. Apparently, theft had been going on for a while, and Hashem had not punished it. He let it go for a long time. V'chol anishba, and also all those who swear falsely, from this Torah, kamohan kanika, have been cleansed, which means they have not been punished. People have been getting away with stealing and swearing falsely. What do we mean here by swearing falsely? We mean swearing falsely in the context of taking somebody's money, of theft, where people would steal people's money, and then when they were taken to court or whatever situation came up, they would swear falsely that they were innocent. Says the Navi Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Hotzei siha nuum Hashem tzvakos, I have let it out, I've taken it out, says Hashem tzvakos, uva el beis haganav, and it will come, it means the punishment of the Torah, will come to the house of the thief, ve'al beis hanishba b'shmi la'shaker, and to the house of the one who swears in my name falsely, Vilane besoch beso, the punishment will literally sleep in his house. It's going to take up residence in his house. It's not just going to pass through or visit for a short time. It's actually going to remain in the house. It's going to go to sleep in the house itself. V'chilatu, it will destroy him. V'es eitzav, and his wood. V'es avanav, and his stones. So the punishment for theft and for swearing falsely is now going to be unleashed, says Hashem. That's what you're seeing over here. And it's going to destroy those who steal and swear falsely. The Medrash tells us that you see how bad a shuas sheker is, a false swear, a false oath is, that even those things that are not normally destroyed, the wood and the stones, particularly the stones, which would normally not be destroyed, in this case, even they will be incinerated, even they will be destroyed, let alone the people and the possessions. Everything is going to get destroyed. The punishment for those who steal and then swear falsely to enable their evil ways, that is about to be unleashed. That is what Zechariah is seeing over here in seeing this massive Torah. Now, we'll have to understand, why does he see this Torah in its entirety and then this punishment? Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Vayetze Hamalach Hadover Bi, and the angel that was speaking to me came out. Vayomer Elai, and he said to me, Sanai Necha Urei, lift up your eyes and see. Ma Hayotzeis Hazos, what is coming out? What is this thing coming out? You're about to see something coming out. So lift up your eyes and see it. He's telling me, says Zechariah, to look, to see something. Va'omar, and I said, Mahi, what is it? Rashi says, when he saw it, he says, what is it? Va'yomar, and he said, Zos ha'efa hayotzeis. This is the efa that is coming out. An efa is a measure of volume. It's a container. It's a container that measures a certain amount, an efa. So this Eifa that is coming out, Vayomer, and he said, Zos einam b'chol ha'aretz. This is for those whose eyes are on the entire land. Meaning, for those who have been doing evil, have been stealing other people's money, and they see the whole land as their opportunity to take what they want, then this is their punishment. This is going to be the way they're going to be punished. It's through this Eifa, this measurement. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. V'hine kikar oferes nises. And behold, there was a kikar. Kikar is an amount. Oferes is lead. That was lifted up. Just to give you a sense, the word kikar is used in the construction of the Mishkan. The gold that was turned into the menorah is a kikar zahav. It's the size of, it's the lump of gold. I mean, we're talking about the menorah, so it's a large lump of gold, is a kikar zahav. So this is a kikar of oferes. This is a kikar of lead. This lump, big, big lump of lead that he sees lifted up. Vizos Isha Achas, and this one woman, Yosheves Besocha Eifa, was sitting in the Eifa. So he sees this Eifa, this container. In the container is a woman. Outside the container is this massive piece of lead. Vayomer, and the angel said to me, Zos Harisha, the woman in the Eifa, the woman in the container, represents the evil that they are doing, the evil of stealing and of swearing falsely. Vayashlech osa el tocha eifa, and he threw her inside the eifa. She was already in the eifa. Rashi explains he threw her down inside the eifa. She was sitting in the eifa. Now she was knocked down inside the eifa, representing what's going to happen to all the evil people who have done this, that they've been so cavalier with people's money and with swearing falsely. And then Vayashleches Eben Ho Feres Al Piha, and then he threw the large stone of lead on the mouth of this Opheres. In other words, to stop it up so she can't get out. So now she's stopped up inside of it. So this is all, of course, symbolic. But what he's seeing is that the woman in the ephah that's representing the evil is knocked down, and then the lead is put on top to stuff up the opening of this ephah, which apparently would seem to mean that she's going to be permanently stuck there, and the evil will be taken away. Now, obviously, there was a big issue with people stealing and people swearing falsely. That's clearly what was going on. And Hashem is telling Zechariah that this is going to be eradicated in a big way. That's clearly what is happening over here. However, the Gemara tells us an entirely different story that is also being told here. In addition to the sin of swearing falsely and theft, the Gemara says this woman represents the sin of Avodah Zarah. And in fact, the famous story, which we have told many times, that the Gemara tells us in a couple of places, one of them is Maseches Sanhedrin, that the Gemara tells us that in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, the men of the Great Assembly, davened to Hashem to remove the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. As you know, they did. They davened, and the Yetzer Hara was removed. And that is why today, when we read about and hear about real Avodah Zarah, we say, it's silly, it's foolish, it's senseless. What kind of foolish people, what kind of lack of intelligence, what kind of people do such ridiculous things as worship and bow down to an inanimate object? That's what we say, because that is correct. That is what Avodah Zarah is. It is foolish. It is senseless. That is correct. But the reason why we're able to see that is because we do not have the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah the way they used to have it, as we have said many times. And that's because we live after the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah davened to remove the Avodah Zarah, the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. As the Gemara tells us, all Avodah Zarah that goes on today is only minag avoseihem biyadeihem, that the non-Jews who worship Avodah Zarah, they're just doing what their ancestors did. They don't really have the same drive for it as it used to be. The truth is, all Yetzer Hara is like that. Yetzer Hara that we each struggle with, everybody struggles with Yetzer Hara. Whatever it is, pick the thing that you struggle with the most. If that Yetzer Hara were removed from you, you would see it as ridiculous. But we don't say it's ridiculous because we struggle. So we respect our Yetzer Hara because we struggle with it. They struggled mightily with Avodah Zarah, and for them it was the worst and most powerful of all Yetzer Haras. But it was removed. So that we know from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. This is one of the psukim that the Gemara over there cites in explaining what happened. They saw in a vision, they saw that when they davened for the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah to be removed, they saw a flame that looked like a lion emerging from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from the Holy of Holies, which represented the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. They wanted to make sure that it would be stopped forever, and therefore they somehow got it into a container, a container of lead. But the problem is, it screamed. The Yetzer Hara screamed, and the scream went misof ha'olam ad sofa, went around the entire world, this scream of the Yetzer Hara. And they said, what are we supposed to do? We need to stop it from screaming, otherwise maybe Hashem will have Rachmanus, maybe he'll have mercy on the Yetzer Hara and allow it out. And therefore they took a stopper made of lead and stuffed up the opening, which blocked the sound of the screaming Yetzer Hara. This pasuk is the one that is cited by the Gemara to represent that, that the this lead, this chunk of lead, was placed into the top of the container to block the Yetzer Hara, not only from getting out, but also from making noise, from yelling. That's what the Gemara says. What does it mean that it screamed? What does it mean that Hashem would have mercy? That obviously needs explanation. Clearly, the Yetzer Hara doesn't have free will, and it's doing only what it's programmed to do. What does it mean Hashem would have mercy? Remember that the world was created in a manner that there would be a Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. Remember as well, as we've explained many times, that there is a consequence that we suffer because we do not have the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. It used to be, before the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah was taken away, everyone had a desire to serve, to worship. Everybody wanted to worship. Everybody felt a need to worship. There was a drive to worship. The problem was that they were enticed to worship something inanimate rather than to worship Hashem. But everybody wanted to worship. By removing the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, that also removed the innate drive of a human being to want to worship. And today, instead, we struggle with whether we should worship or not. Not what we should worship, but whether we should worship. And the struggle is whether to worship or to be secular. That's the struggle today, because we don't have the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah deemed that the struggle that we have today was more manageable than the original struggle, which was, I have to worship, what should I worship? They deemed that as a more difficult struggle than today. Imagine that. Think of all how difficult it is for us to focus on Hashem for more than a minute, and how difficult it is for us to be motivated to worship, and how, look how secular the whole world is, that they don't want to worship. And yet, the taiva for Avodah Zarah was worse than this, was worse than the drive to be secular today. That feeling that I had to worship Avodah Zarah was much stronger, and therefore they removed it. So the Yetzer Hara screaming, and Hashem considering, so to speak, to go back to the old way, that's because there is advantage to the old way. There is something to be said for it. Kiviyachol, so to speak, in a certain way, Hashem might prefer the old way because at least then people want to worship. And there will be more people who will seek Him, although there will also be more people who will seek Avodah Zarah. It's six in one half dozen in the other. It's actually not that. It's actually better this way than that way. We trust Chazal, of course, that it's better this way than that way. But it's not a slam dunk obvious thing. It is a real question, which one is better, the old struggle or today's struggle. So it is from this pasuk that Chazal tell us that they stuffed up the opening of the container where the Avodah Zarah was being kept, and where the Yetzer Hara was being kept, and therefore the scream could not be heard. So we now have that Zechariah has seen a scroll that represents the entire Torah. We see the punishment for theft and stealing, theft and swearing falsely, and we also see the eradication of Avodah Zarah. Those are the things we've seen so far. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Vayasa inai, and I lifted my eyes. Vayir, and I saw. Vihine shtayim nashim yotzos. And behold, there were two women coming out. Viruach bechan fehem, and there was wind or spirit in their wings. Apparently they were angels, and there was wind or spirit in their wings. Vilahena chnafayim kechan feha chasida. And they had wings like the wings of a chasida. A chasida is a type of bird. Some say it's the stork. But they had wings like the chasida. The chasida is a non-kosher bird listed in Parshas Shmini. It is and they had wings resembling that of a chasida. Vatisena es ha'efa. They lifted up this efa. This efa, this container that had the woman representing the Yetzer Hara inside of it, they lifted it up. Bein ha'aretz uvein ha'shamayim. They lifted it up between the land and the heavens. They picked it up into the sky. Va'omar el ha'malach ha'dover bin, I said to the malach who was speaking to me, Ana hema molichos es ha'efa. To where are they taking the efa, this container? Va'omar elai, they said, and he said to me, Livnos Lavayis Be'eretz Shinar, to build for her a house in the land of Shinar. Shinar is Bavel. Bavel is where the Jews were in Golus before they were now rebuilding the rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. They were coming from Bavel. So it's to build a house for her in Bavel. Building a house is a statement of permanence. So it's to build a house for her in Eretz Shinar in Bavel. V'huchan, and it is prepared. V'hunicha sham al mechunasa, and she will be placed there on her foundation. That is what is going to happen. Chazal tell us, what is this two women, and what is meant by ruach, by spirit, or wind in their wings, and what is the reference to the chasida, to this bird, perhaps it's the stork, what is the reference? Now, many of you may be familiar with the famous famous chazal, that why is it called a chasida? Why is the bird called a chasida? Because it does chesed im zuga, because it does chesed with its mate. That this bird, let's say it's a stork, that it Mrs. Stork and Mr. Stork, that they do chesed with each other. They bring each other what they need, their food or whatever it is. So and that's why it's called a chasida, from the language of chesed. Many Divrei Torah are said on this. I cannot tell you who the first one is to have said this. There are many who have said it, that the chasida is a non-kosher bird, and you would have expected that if it does chesed, it would be a kosher bird, because we know that the animals that have certain traits, and you would have thought that a bird that does chesed like this should be a kosher bird. So the vart that many say about this is that since it only does chesed with its mate, therefore it's not the type of chesed that we're looking for. We're looking for chesed with not just with one's mate. That is what many say, and that's why the chasida is not kosher. You can't say that's why it's not kosher, but that it is an explanation to understand. It's not kosher because the Torah said it's not kosher, but it's a way of understanding it. However, that approach is nice, but it is not in depth. It is missing the main point, just to say it that way. It's nice, and it's a nice thing to say, but we of course have to understand that on a little bit of a deeper level, and we will get it from... Okay, I don't remember where I saw it. I saw it in one of the Rishonim now, and I don't remember where I saw it. I think it's in Rashi, but not here in Zechariah. At any rate, there is a more in-depth way of understanding this point. So the Gemara tells us that it is Rashi. It's Rashi in the Gemara. Yeah. So the Gemara tells us that these two women represent two other midos ra'os, two other bad traits. One is gaiva, one is haughtiness, is arrogance, and the other is chanifa. Chanifa means flattery. We know that there's an isser in the Torah, one is not allowed to be mechanif, one is not allowed to flatter somebody, meaning flattering somebody means that someone who's really a bad person or doing bad things, and we want to be on their good side so that they'll treat us well or give us things, so we flatter them, we tell them, or we make them feel that we support them when they're really doing bad things. And that's usser, that's an avera to do. That's called chanifa. Both are bad things. Chanifa is considered to be a very bad thing, actually. We don't talk about it so much. I don't know why our society doesn't talk about it so much, but in the Gemara and in the Rishonim, it's treated as a very, very bad thing to do chanifa. So these two represent arrogance and chanifa and flattery. So and then Zechariah asks where they are going, where they're taking this container, and the Malach says they're taking it to Bavel. They're taking it to Eretz Shinar, to Bavel, to build a house. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Kedushin that there are certain things that came down into the world, and some things went predominantly to one group or another. For instance, the Gemara says that Asara Kavin Yofi Yardol La'olam, 10 kav, kav is a measurement, of yofi, of beauty, came into the world. Tisha Natla Yerushalayim. 9 were taken by Yerushalayim, and 1 went to the rest of the world. That's the type of Gemara we have. You might be familiar with some of the other quotes from that Gemara about 10 measures of something, 9 went to one group and 1 went to another group. The Gemara says over there that there were 10 measures of anius, of poverty, came into the world. Tisha Natla Bavel. 9 went to Bavel, and 1 went to the rest of the world. The Gemara then says, there were 10 measures of Chanifa, of Gassus, 10 measures of arrogance came into the world. 9 went to Elam. Elam is an area near Bavel, and 1 went to the rest of the world. Elam is an area. It seems that Shushan HaBira, which was the capital of the Persian kingdom, but the city of Shushan was in the province of Elam. And Elam was an arrogant place. 9 measures of arrogance went to Elam, and 1 went to the rest of the world. The Gemara tells us that how could it be that it says here that arrogance and Chanifa and flattery went to Bavel? Bavel didn't have arrogance. How do we know it didn't have arrogance? Because Bavel was a place of Torah. Torah flourished in Bavel. And Torah does not flourish where you find arrogance. We know Ha'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od Mikol Adam Asher Al Pnei Adama, that Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest of humble people on the face of the earth. And that's why he was the greatest of Torah also. Torah and humility go together. Torah and arrogance do not go together. They don't fit. And therefore, Elam, which was an arrogant place, did not have Torah. The Gemara tells us there were 2 great Talmidei Chacham who lived in Elam. Mordechai is one of them. Daniel is another one of them. They lived in Elam. And Elam were not able to learn Torah. They weren't interested. They were arrogant and therefore did not learn. They were not able to accept the Torah. And Mordechai and Daniel were zochim lilmod. They merited to learn. Velo zachu lilame. They did not merit to teach because the area was an arrogant place. Whereas Bavel was not an arrogant place. It was a place that was poor. Poverty, usually, I should say the other way around. You don't usually find arrogance with people who are poor. That's a rare thing. Bavel was a poor place, and therefore they were not arrogant. And therefore Ezra HaSofer, who lived in Bavel, was not only Zocha Lilmo, not only to learn, but Lelame, to teach as well. So the Gemara says, it can't be that this representation of arrogance went to Bavel. Bavel was not an arrogant place. So the Gemara says it's true. The 2 things came down to Bavel. That would be arrogance and Chanifa and flattery. Only flattery remained in Bavel. Arrogance moved over to Elam, to the area of Elam, where that is where the arrogance ended up setting up shop. Which means that originally when these 2 things came down, they were going to go to Bavel. Bavel was supposed to be both a place of flattery and a place of arrogance. But in the end, I imagine it has to do with us being there, with Klal Yisrael being in Bavel, the arrogance was pushed out and it went to Elam instead. Rashi explains in the Gemara, where do you see in Pasuk Tes in verse 9 that these 2 women represent both arrogance and flattery? So Rashi says, because Ruach b'chanfehem, a spirit or a wind in their wings, Ruach is a reference to arrogance, as in a person who is Ramos Ruach, who's got a haughty spirit. That's what Ruach represents. And Chasida, that bird that only does chesed with its own mate, that represents flattery. That's what it represents. Because when a person only does chesed with their mate, then what they are doing is they are doing for themselves. it's actually selfish, it's not chesed. Because what they're trying to do, it's flattery. It's they're interested in reciprocity, so they do for the other, so they'll do for themselves. That's the intent of the chesed. It's not that a person should not do chesed with their mate. We, of course, know that it's perhaps the most important chesed to do with one's spouse, with one's children, with one's family. However, when the chesed stops there and doesn't go beyond the walls of the house, that is a simen that shows that the chesed is not really chesed, it's actually selfish. A person who really is doing chesed, the chesed will spill over outside the home as well. Even if the main chesed is done in the home, but there will be chesed done outside the home as well, even if it's only secondary, but there will be chesed. But when chesed stops at the front door and doesn't go past the house, then that shows that it's really a source of flattery, of chanifa. It's not really chesed. And therefore, it is actually a bad thing, not a good thing. And that is the deeper understanding of this chasida of doing chesed only with one's own spouse. So we have here now, at the end of this perek, a number of themes that seem disparate. We have that first Zechariah sees a scroll that represents the whole Torah. Then he's told that what's being unleashed from this Torah is the punishment for those who have stolen and swore falsely. Then he sees the Yetzer Hara, represented by this woman, being knocked down inside of this container and then stuffed up with this chunk of lead, which represents apparently that this Yetzer Hara is being eradicated, but the Gemara tells us it's also referring to, or maybe primarily referring to, the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. We've segued into Avodah Zarah. Then we move into a discussion about two other things, arrogance and flattery, and how they're going to set up shop in Bavel and in Elam. And that's where those Yetzaras can be found. So, what is Zechariah being told over here? What are we being told? I cannot claim to understand this 100%. This is difficult. Rashi told us in the beginning of Zechariah that Zechariah's visions are cryptic, and it's hard to follow and understand, but we'll try our best over here. And remember the context. This is the time when they are beginning to build the second Beis Hamikdash. And Zechariah is seeing all of these things. What is he seeing exactly over here? So he sees that which represents the entire Torah, and it is 3,200 times the size of anything we can imagine. The known universe. It's 3,200 times that size. The Torah is vast. The Torah is endless. The Torah cannot be fully grasped. It is huge. And Hashem, it seems, is sending a message that in what merit are we able to build the second Beis HaMikdash? It is in the merit of the incredible study of Torah that was going on in Bavel. Bavel was the seat of Limud HaTorah, of learning Torah, and it remained so even after the construction of the second Beis HaMikdash, as we know. And the Gemara that we learn today, even to today, is Talmud Bavli, is the Babylonian Talmud. That's where it comes from. The learning of Torah flourished in Bavel. It was a poor place, there was no arrogance, and Torah flourished. And that is the merit through which we were able to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. However, Bavel was not without problems. There were some problems. Theft was a problem. Swearing falsely was a problem. When there's poverty, theft is more common. Arrogance is less common, but theft is more common. The Milsilos Yerushalayim tells us, the Ramchal Rav Moshe Chaim Letzato writes, and when he's writing that everything is a nisayon, everything is a challenge, no matter what you have in life, whatever you were dealt in life is a challenge. Everybody is challenged. And he says, if a person is wealthy, then the challenge is not to be arrogant. If a person is poor, the challenge is not to steal. That's what he writes. So Bavel, being poor, they were not arrogant. They had Torah. They had incredible volumes of Torah. But there was a problem with theft. There was a problem with swearing falsely in order to maintain that theft. Swearing falsely is a terrible chilul Hashem. It's a terrible, terrible thing to do. The Gemara tells us there are all kinds of terrible, terrible punishments for swearing falsely. So Hashem is showing Zechariah that in the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash, in the merit of the Torah that was learned, that's wonderful. But understand, there's going to be unleashed now punishment against those who are stealing and those who are swearing falsely, which I have held off from punishing until now. But now that we are coming back to Eretz Yisrael, now we're rebuilding the second Beis HaMikdash, now those punishments are going to be unleashed, and I'm going to eradicate theft and swearing falsely. Now, it doesn't mean there won't be any theft and there won't be any swearing falsely, just as the getting rid of Avodah Zarah doesn't mean there's no Avodah Zarah, but it will not have the same strength. It seems that also theft and swearing falsely would similarly be diminished in their scope as we are coming in to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Those things that were problematic in Bavel, those things are going to be rectified now. Avodah Zarah, we know from the Gemara, was a struggle that was consuming everybody. And the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah deemed it as something that needed to be removed. And so, with the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash, I keep saying rebuilding of the second, with the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, it is a turning over a new leaf. There's a new world order about to happen. The Beis HaMikdash is going to be built. Things are going to change, says Hashem. If these are the things that are going to happen, we're going to see a diminishing of theft, a diminishing of false swearing. Those are going to happen through punishment. There's going to be punishment against those who have done it, and that will thereby diminish that avera, those averos. In addition, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah davened that Avodah Zarah should be removed. And again, the new world order gave rise to this ability for the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah to daven to change the way the world works. And Avodah Zarah would therefore be removed as a Yetzer Hara. Zechariah then also sees the two averos of arrogance and of flattery. And they go to take up residence in Bavel. But one doesn't remain in Bavel. One goes on to Elam. These were not new things. This is showing Zechariah something that had happened before. This coming down of flattery and of arrogance to the world, that didn't happen now. The Gemara, when it says there were 10 measures that came down to the world, 9 went here and 1 to the rest of the world, that was from the beginning. This is not a new thing. He's being shown the history of Bavel. You should know. Bavel was slated to be the seat of flattery and the seat of arrogance. The Torah pushed out the seat of arrogance. It's not the seat of arrogance. Elam became the seat of arrogance. Torah and arrogance, they don't coexist. And it was pushed out. Flattery is still there in Bavel. It's still an issue. And flattery goes together with the issue of handling money, of being selfish, of being unable to be Balei Chesed, that because of the poverty, the sense, the need for money, it was very difficult to use money properly. There were those who did terrible things, they stole and swore falsely, and then there were those who didn't necessarily steal and swear falsely, but their Chesed was actually flattery. And the message that Zechariah seems to be given here is that in the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, take care to correct these misdeeds. Yes, the Anshei Knesset HaGedola removed the Avodah Zarah for the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. But understand there are other problems that need to be addressed. And that is theft. And that is swearing falsely. Says Hashem, I'm going to punish them. There's going to be a message sent. Still, you got to be careful about it. And be careful about flattery. Those are things that were in Bavel, and all of you who are coming up from Bavel, you lived with these things, and you need to be careful about them as you are entering Eretz Yisrael and building the second Beis HaMikdash. And arrogance, you successfully got rid of it from Bavel. You successfully made Bavel a place of Torah, which is wonderful. Make sure that coming in now to Eretz Yisrael for the second Beis HaMikdash, make sure you continue to maintain that vigilance in eradicating arrogance and instead promoting Torah and depth in Torah and understanding of Torah. These are the things that they're being told are the things to watch out for as you are starting this new endeavor of the second Beis HaMikdash. Is this something which all generations struggle with the same way? I would say no. Different generations struggle with different things. What we struggle with is different than what previous generations struggle with, and same thing for them. However, we are being told that in a new endeavor, like the Beis HaMikdash, which is what's going on over here, a brand new endeavor, we're told several things. We're being told, first of all, you should know that when there's a new endeavor, there's an opportunity for change. There's an opportunity for making things better. There's an opportunity to make things different than they were before. The Gemara tells us, Gimel Mochlin Lahem Al Kol V'Nosim, there are three people that get forgiven for all their sins. One is a chasan, getting married. Another is a gersh and isgayer, a convert, as they convert. And the other is Misha Alu L'Gdula, someone who rises to prominence, to greatness. It's the same idea in all those cases. The person is starting a new chapter in their life. And when they start a new chapter in life, the opportunity for change is great. We really say this every year when it comes to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. We say it's a new year. It's an opportunity for change. It's a new chapter in our lives. Building the Beis HaMikdash is a huge new chapter in the history of the world. And therefore, big changes can happen. Yetzer hara for Avodah Zarah can be destroyed, eradicated. And the Navi is being told over here that as they are starting this new endeavor, that they need to be careful with promoting Torah, avoiding arrogance, which are two sides of the same coin. And then as well, being careful with flattery, with stealing, with swearing falsely, with other people's money, being careful how we treat the possessions of other people. These are the messages being sent over here specifically for that generation. Of course, we need those messages as well. But the message of change and seizing an opportunity of a new system to make changes, then that, of course, is a universal message. It would seem, I don't think I have to say this, I think it's clear to everybody, that as the world we live in has been going through these upheavals, we don't know where everything is going to land, we don't know how things are going to actually come out on the other side, but whatever it is, even if things come back to exactly the way they were before, it's never going to be exactly the way it was before. We've gone through and are going through so much, it's impossible for the world to be the same. As the world is going through upheaval and change, then the opportunity for individual change is great. And a person should seize that opportunity and say, I can be different. This is a new world. It's a new chapter in my life. And things, I can do something differently than I did before, even if it's been going on for a long, long, long time. We're going to stop here. If anybody has any questions, please either chat it in or ask it now. And otherwise, we will pick it up next week. Okay. I will see everybody next week. Mir Tzah Hashem.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.